All right, we'll start this early.
Okay.
I'm Greg.
I'm Jane.
Hi, Jane. Where are you from?
I'm from Orange.
Orange?
Orange.
Yeah. All right.
I'm Bob. I'm her other half.
Okay.
I'm Ellen from California, about 20 miles down the road.
Okay. Which way?
Can't go west.
Can't go west. Not from here.
I'm not west. We should live in a
public. Catalina.
All right.
You're wonderful. Now, are you just here visiting, or you can live here now? Just for this.
Awesome.
Where in South Africa? My buddy right behind you did a mission trip to Uganda a couple of years ago. Can't wait to go back.
Yep.
You
right?
Yeah, that's what he says. Well, it's nice to meet you. Hey. I'm Greg.
That's Tom.
Jim. Where are you from, Jim?
San Diego.
San Diego. Where are you from?
Dallas.
Dallas?
Mm-hmm. I love that accent.
I know that.
Yeah, right.
I was going to say,
don't touch me.
Hi, I'm Terry.
I'm Terry.
Where are you from?
Well, raised in Dallas, in Michigan, Massachusetts, lived in St. Louis, and I was in Fresno, which is about 2 hours. No way.
Well, I'm from Temecula. I was in Long Beach for a long time. But where do you go to church in Fresno?
Well, I live in Chowchilla now, so it's the college church for a while in Palm Avenue.
Yeah. Lee Smith is a good friend.
Oh, Lee, had your son. I'll say with him in Atlanta earlier because he's such a sweetie.
I might have been a lecturer here when I said hi to him.
Oh, you can.
His daughter, Catherine,
okay.
He worshiped with his
daughter.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Lee and Smith. The son-in-law, Randy. Hi.
Hi.
I'm Greg.
Randy.
You don't have to stand.
Nice to meet you.
Where are you from, Randy?
Houston.
Houston?
Yeah. Go to Bamel.
Yeah, Bamel Road.
Used to be called.
My sister moved to Terrell, Texas. Last year, and now she's got her house up for sales because she's going to Tulsa because her husband couldn't find work in Dallas area, and now they live on a 205-acre farm in Talladega, Alabama, backed up against the Talladega National Forest. So they just had all this land. She said, "I don't know what possessed us to sell that and leave that." So we get more tornadoes in Tulsa, so a little excitement in your life. Well, we'll get started. If I have to throw John and Cecil out, I'll explain that after they leave. Another guy coming that I may have to prevent from coming in. But Cecil and Steve Puckett and I are doing a class in the morning of just 30 years of friendship together. Pepperdine has been just an incredible place for us. So let me tell you real quick about who I am and what we're doing, because you might be in the wrong place and you actually wanted to come hear a lecture, and that ain't going to happen here today. But I was a preacher in Churches of Christ for 30 years, 7 years in Alabama, 8 years in Florida, 15 years in Long Beach. And about the time we were going to retire or resign, I could have stayed at Long Beach as long as I wanted to. It was a wonderful church. It was a very positive experience. But my mother-in-law was not doing well. My mother was not doing well. So we decided, let's go back to Alabama and help take care of moms. And about that time, my son got married in Temecula, California. It's about 140 miles from here, I think. And he and I were in the funeral business together as part-time workers in Long Beach. And he said, "Dad, I have an opportunity to buy a mortuary over here. Do you and Mom want to come and go to work with me?" So my wife had been a school teacher all these years. Long story short, for the last 11, we're in our 11th year now. My son and my wife and I run England Family Mortuary out in Temecula. And last year opened up an online cremation service because a lot of people are doing everything by computer these days, and that's done better than we ever expected. And it, about 3 years ago, opened up our own crematory. So we're ensconced in that business now. This class came about because I would sit down. This is my 20th, I think I've been coming to Pepperdine for 26 years now. And you sit down, you know, at dinner, and you never know who's going to be at the table. So you start meeting people. Well, for 20-some-odd years, I'm a preacher at a church somewhere, and there's preachers all over the campus, so that didn't spark much interest. But in the last 11 years, when I said, well, I'm a funeral director, and the conversation from that point on at with whomever we were eating a meal was just questions, questions, questions. And so I pitched the idea to Mike Cope and his team. I said, you know, this is what happens to me every year now. People just have a lot of questions about death and dying and funerals and cremations and stuff. I said, let's just, would you be interested in me doing a class? And all I have no agenda. I don't have anything prepared to talk to you about. I don't have a speech. I'm almost done with what I'm saying now. And I'm just going to answer your questions. And if you don't have any questions, we're done. So, but I want to pass a thing out, pass something out to you. And these are really nice. A lot of people don't want a mortuary pen. I don't know why. These are very nice gel pens, so help yourself to a pen. But if you take one of these and pass it on, I would appreciate it.
Might as well use it now. You need to get it to get one when you check in.
So, I'm here to try to answer any questions you might have about anything related to death, dying, funerals, cremations, anything of that nature. Yeah.
Back when I did a little part-time insurance work back in the early 80s, I can't even remember what it was, but we were told this is how much you tell somebody at a standard funeral, you know, try to pitch life insurance. What's the typical funeral? If not doing cremation, you're going to have a burial. Going to buy a casket. What's the typical cost?
Typical cost for a funeral. It depends on whether you use a family-owned or corporate-owned funeral home. Tell you a little bit about the difference. A corporate-owned funeral home, SCI, Dignity, you see those things around. They have a CEO. Now, let me back up. Wonderful, wonderful people work at these funeral homes, and they truly want to help you through a situation. I work for one of those funeral homes. They have a CEO that's being paid an insane amount of money, and somebody's got to make enough money to pay his salary. And guess who that is? It's the person you sit down and talk with about a funeral. They're going to push you to the next level. They're scripted to push you to the next level. So if you say, I'm interested in this casket, or if you like that casket, let me show you this one. A few hundred dollars more, but it's much nicer. So to answer your question, it depends. I tell people, find a family-owned funeral home because they're going to be a lot more reasonable. In our area, a typical funeral burial with a moderately priced, or actually a rather low-end price casket, and a visitation hall. Ours will run you between $3,500 and $5,000, depending on the casket. The people right up the road, that same service will cost you a little over $6,000. That's the difference in the two. Now, we do have a philosophy. We're not in it for merchandising. We're in it to minister to people. I'll give you a case in point. My sister-in-law died a couple of years ago in Michigan. They cremated her. They had a memorial service with a video. Okay? Now, we would do that for $1,395. In Michigan, my brother-in-law paid $7,400 for the same thing. And we told him, we can arrange to fly Gail's body to California, cremate her, fly her back, and still save you about $3,000. Mm-hmm. So that's your average in this area. See, so the East Coast is always higher. You could almost double a funeral for the East Coast. Yes.
Well, one time I went to a funeral of a man who was Jewish, and they actually buried him in a box. It's just like, you know, like a piece of plywood. Like if you took four pieces, one, two, three, four, five, six pieces of plywood, and took a hammer and da da da, that's what they buried him in. Mm-hmm. And the whole time I was thinking, I like those people. They to me, it makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I'll come back. Let me reply to that. Jewish custom still is to bury in a box with no metal.
Yes.
And I've had a lot of people say, well, just throw me in a pine box. A pine box is like $1,700. So that guy was we've had one person built a casket for his wife. And he was a cabinet maker. And it looked like a rowboat with a lid on it. And it would not fit in our hearse. It was so big. It wouldn't fit in the grave. It was so big. But that's the simplicity and the beauty of a Jewish funeral. We've done a number of it. It's just a pine box.
My mother passed away, and we had to do arrangements for her, my sister and I. And we had it cremated, but you've got my recommendation is buy your plots now. Mm-hmm. Don't wait because they're extremely expensive. The more you wait, the more dollars each year that they go up. You buy your plot, you never have to worry about it again. There'll be certain funeral arrangements that have to be made. You can still pay for that in advance as well. Mm-hmm. So my recommendation is at least get your plots, you know, together and paid for, even if you have to pay them over a couple of years. It's worth it because then when you die, you don't burden your spouse or somebody else to do all that.
Bob, you and I have never met, right?
No, sir.
And I didn't pay you anything to make that comment.
No, sir.
I was going to say, if you don't get anything else out of a discussion like this, plan your funeral in advance and pay for as much of it as you can in advance. Yes.
Yes. My husband and I planned to be cremated. Last year, my dad died on May 11th, and he was cremated, but because he died in Arizona, where he only lived for a year before he passed, they had a memorial for him there. And then because he preached in Seattle for over 40 years, we had the subsequent month we had a memorial for him there. And then his final remains, he wanted to be in Valdosta, Georgia, where he grew up, and there's a lake there for him. So that's where he, and so now my mom wants the same thing for her, after she's cremated, to also have her ashes there at the lake. And so I told my husband, I think I want to join my parents. I want that too. So my question is to facilitate several states, things like that, do you need to have a local mortuary, or you can still choose, can you go online to find the best prices? Mm-hmm. How would we do that? Because my brother did all of it, and I don't know to this day how much he spent for anything.
I can answer only from a California legal perspective. Mm-hmm. But if you have, and remind me to tell a story about cremation.
Okay.
That involves my witnesses. If you have a permit, when you have a person cremated, on the permit in California, it says where you're going to go with those cremated remains.
Okay.
And so we tell people, if you permit it to your residence, pretty much can do anything with it you want to do. If you decide to bury, you got to have a different permit. If you decide to scatter at sea and you have a company to do that, you have to have a different permit. Mm-hmm. But as far as carrying the remains from one state to another, As long as those remains are permitted to your care, to your person, that's not an issue. If you fly on an airline, they're going to want to, if they stop you and realize this is cremated remains, I've had families say many times they want to see that permit. Do you have the right to have that?
Okay.
So you always want to do it by law, just so you don't have remains taken from you. As far as scattering somewhere at a lake or something like that, there's just all kinds of issues. In California, you cannot put cremated remains in a lake. Unless that lake is 1,000 feet wide, because you have to put them 500 yards from the shore. So there's not many lakes around here 1,000 yards wide. So I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
No, I was just, the remains will be here in Van Austin, Georgia. So they'll be scattered there.
Yeah. So you want to check with what are the local thing. Now, Florida one time, in Florida we had a lady at the church where I preached, and she, her husband Earl died, and she said, Greg, would you, he was a fisherman, loved to fish on the Indian River, which is not a river, so we're good, and he said, Earl always wanted his remains scattered in the Indian River. Would you do it for me? I'm sure. Now, I was a police chaplain in this, in that small town, and I didn't know. So I told Cecil, I said, I got to go scat Earl over the Indian River. You want to go with me? Well, Cecil never has been smart enough not to go with me someplace. So, yeah, that's good. He's an adventuresome guy. Yeah, let's do it. So I took my young son and Cecil. We walked out on a pier, and it was a calm day, as I remember, right, Cecil? Just calm
for a moment.
And so I didn't even know what cremated remains looked like. I had a little cardboard box. So I opened it up, and there's Earl. And so I just took the box and I went like that. And as soon as I did that, the strongest gust of wind came out. And we had Earl all over us. Spitting him out of our mouth, wiping him out of our eyes. And then later I told a friend of ours, Chris LaMontagne, told Chris what I did. He said, you don't even want to know how many federal laws you violated. You're a police chaplain. So check for local laws. Question.
Well, just a couple of different scenarios that I went through with my husband. He passed away like 7 years ago. And he had cancer, but we didn't really talk about what he wanted to do. So it was on my shoulders and my kids, of course. You know, it was very difficult. So what I did is, mine's all set. I mean, I don't want to go tomorrow, but I'm ready to go whenever my time comes. So that's, if I could give any advice for anybody, is whatever age you're at, don't put off making those kind of arrangements. You know, my plot's going to be next to my first husband, and that's at my husband now. We've been married a couple of years, and we decided that we would be buried next to our spouses. He's a ruler as well, just because that's where our kids are going to want to go.
Oh,
so, because that was a tough thing when we got married. That, okay, now what are we going to do? You know, so he said, well, I think you need to be married next to John, because that's where your kids, it's for your kids, for them to be able to go there together. So that's all set and done. His is all set and done. And then my mom, every time I go to visit in Dallas where she lives, she takes me through everything she's already got set up, ready to go. Just so, because it's going to fall on my shoulders, being the oldest of the four kids. It's going to fall on my shoulders for her. And so even when her husband passed away, they had everything ready to go. I just came home, implemented whatever they wanted me to do. So that's the most precious gift you can give your family is to, I know it's a difficult thing to talk about, but if you can, don't wait till, you know, there's an illness there and then you really don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I'm just really thankful that, you know, my husband now that we're sitting ready. And
good. I'll come right back in just a second. I dealt with that. That's a really good thing you did to be buried with your spouses. I dealt with a family this year that the husband was already buried at Riverside National Cemetery. His first wife was buried at Riverside National next to him, but his second wife died. You know, and her family didn't want the first wife in the same grave. You see, it became an absolute mess.
Oh,
and for Riverside National, give them kudos. They just said, you know what, we're not going there with that. She's resting there, and that's the way it's going to be. The family can just deal with that. But you're right. You cannot give a better gift. Even if you don't fund it, just write it down.
Just pay for
it. Just write it down. But if you can fund it, it's a beautiful gift. Yes.
One small little problem we had when I went to bury my mother. My dad had already passed away. He was already in the grave. They didn't have another plot. They were going to be buried one on top of each other. Well, little did we know, the cemetery doesn't really allow that. And so that's why we had to cremate her. Mm-hmm. And they would allow the cremation over top, mm-hmm. but not another coffin. Mm-hmm. So that's another problem, too, you might encounter. So that's what I encountered.
Yeah.
But they did accept the cremation on top of the other casket. Mm-hmm. So my mom got shortchanged.
Yeah. There's a few. There's a Inglewood Cemetery. Figure this one out. You can bury a wooden casket there. You cannot bury a wooden urn. And that rule is 100-something years old. Nobody knows why. But they will not let you, at least 2 years ago, you cannot bury a wooden urn.
Yeah. Years ago, my dad died at an early age. He was 43. My mom was a new widow, having to make a whole lot of decisions. And me being 11 years old, I was kind of tag along for the ride for the whole thing. And it was the figure out a casket, burial plot, and so on. And there were just so many decisions that had to be made that she was having to make, even though she was distraught. And I remember going home at night one night, and I walked into her bedroom without knocking, and she was in tears, and she's just like, out. So, me being a kid, I got out quickly. I didn't want to feel that wrath. But there was just so much that went on, and she's mourning and making decisions at the same time. Since then, at that point, she went ahead and bought four plots because she figured, you know, worst case scenario, I go and then you and your sister, you have somewhere, if nothing else. Fast forward to about 5 years ago, she's already got everything paid for her funeral. She sold the plot to my sister and her husband, the adjoining plots, and because she decided, you're in Colorado, you're not coming back to Alabama, I get that. So it's all decided, which is really good in that she's in a nursing home, she's on dialysis, we don't know how long she'll be with us, but we know that's one stress we don't have.
Yeah. By the way, the reason I gave you this handout is kind of a wake-up call, because you're not going to have to deal with every one of those 122 things. But somebody in your family is going to have to deal with a lot of them. Mm-hmm. A lot of them. And you're right. It is, when you're in grief and you're trying to make those decisions, that's when funeral homes love to talk to you. Because mm-hmm. in your grief, don't you really want to honor your loved one as best as you can? And that, and then the prices start going up.
Or even just having something printed out that has all your passwords, your account numbers, everything, even my password to my phone and my iPad, so my kids can get in there, and my password to online banking, so they can take care of that kind of stuff when it's my time to go. Yeah. So, you know, just having all that stuff in a folder, you know, so they know every single thing that they need to know.
If you don't have somebody else on your bank accounts, do it.
Yep.
Because in California, mm-hmm. It's going to be, depending on which county in which you die, but generally it's going to be a couple of weeks or more before you get a certified death certificate. Mm-hmm. And the bank will not let you touch that account without a certified death certificate. And if you're waiting on life insurance to pay off, most of the companies that I've dealt with, they have to have a certified death certificate. So now you're already 2 weeks into the process before you get that. And then the life insurance company will tell you, we have 4 to 6 weeks to process this. So you got a lady there or a family member that has all these bills coming in and they have no access to any money for 2 months because nobody else is on that bank account. That can burn you bad. Yes, ma'am.
In 2008, my younger brother had a sudden heart attack and completely unexpectedly. He was single, no children. This was in Seattle, Washington. And again, not having any access to anything because he's on all his bank accounts by himself. So it was really, really hard for us to take care of him. Luckily, one of the ladies at the church, she had a plot that she didn't need actually, so she let us use that. My other brother that works at Costco, I didn't know you can get a casket from Costco. $600 for you that. So we were able to.
Technical now.
And then this was a really good mortuary. In fact, I love the sign that they had that said, "Don't speed to get it really for you." But I'm thinking, which is, I'm all ready, but I don't want to go tomorrow. But so they said, that's their motto: "Don't speed, but we'll wait for you." luckily my niece was able to, she's kind of, tech savvy, so she was able to go in and find out his passwords and all that and access things. But like you said, it was weeks before we could pay his bills. None of us ever know if we're going to go suddenly.
All that added stress when you're stressed out for the night. Let me tell you something about Costco caskets. We have a catalog called Costco Busters, and they sell good caskets. I'm not going to knock them, but here's the thing that you need to know. In the mortuary business, it's a standard thing. If you buy a casket other than from the mortuary, there are no package deals available to you. Now, it's everything's a la carte. And so most packages, like in our mortuary, most of our packages, there's anywhere from $1,000 or more built into the package if you buy this package. They say, well, we want that package, but we're going to get our own casket. Well, then the package is off the table. And now we just go down list by list of everything we need done. And you're going to end up paying a lot more money. And I've never had this happen, but if that casket shows up dented, if you buy a casket from a mortuary and it comes dented, they're going to have another casket for you no matter what it takes. Mm-hmm. You get one from Costco and it's dented, sorry, it's your casket. Mm-hmm. So just be aware of that. I'm not saying don't go to Costco, but do what you can to save money at a funeral.
But know what you're getting into,
because your family needs that money more than the funeral home. But they're not going to tell you that. So I'm saying, when my mother died, we showed up, my son and me. We're funeral directors in California. We know the game, so let's just talk. And by the way, my mom said, "I've got everything. I've got an insurance policy, so don't worry about that." So we found her insurance policy. Her funeral was around $6,000, I think, and her insurance policy that her father bought her back in the 50s was for $300.
Wow.
Didn't even cover the tax.
Wow.
So we're dealing credit cards out on the table like it's a card game.
One more small thing. I don't want to take up the conversation, but
This is a conversation.
Yes. Okay. If you don't have a will, if you're married, I would suggest a living will. If you own property or whatever. If you don't, then just a regular, simple, you can get it off the internet, will, and that'll take care of this situation with the brother, sister, husband, wife, whatever. It'll tell everybody as to what's going on and also to free up your bank accounts as well. So you can go online and pull them off and make your own will.
I mean, if you live in California, you can get a trust.
Yeah.
Because the state of California is going to rip you off if you don't have a trust. But yes.
Is there any way that people bypass funeral homes? You hear about people having services at a church, and a cremation, but doesn't this funeral home have to be involved at some point?
Depends on which state you're in. There are cremation services where, like we have, we own one that everything's done online. You never see anybody. All the arrangements are made, and it's paid online, and you either have the remains shipped to you or you come pick them up, but you're not involved with the funeral director one-on-one. But most states, you have to deal with a cremation service or a funeral service or a funeral home because the laws are just structured that way. Now, if you wanted to transfer, we've actually had this happen. A guy came down to our area, died. He was on vacation, lived up in Northern California, and they took his body back in a truck. You can transport a body if you have that permit to do it. It doesn't have to be done by a funeral home. Some, you know, most families choose not to go that route. Mm-hmm. You can do that. Randy?
Living in Texas, one of the things that my wife and I have been facing, my mother-in-law passed away, and so my father-in-law, we've had to get him into a assisted living facility. And going back through his records, he has a lot of individual land pieces that he just, his, like his mom and dad or his grandparents said, "Oh, Jack, that's yours."
Yeah.
And there's nothing legal behind it. Well, now that it's getting to the point where he's elderly, well, trying to divvy all that up, and of course, all the counties are starting to look for the tax money and who's going to pay.
Yeah.
And it's just turned into a legal mess.
I bet.
Just one other thing with my husband, it was, you know, we had the funeral home where they, you know, they went to the hospital and brought him there, or the hospital brought him or whatever, to prepare his body and we had a viewing. Then the next day, the cemetery was involved, you know, because they were two separate entities. They weren't the same thing, so I had to coordinate, you know, the funeral home for his body. And then the cemetery for the plot and the headstone and all of that. And then the church building for the memorials. Mm-hmm. So we had a 3-day extravaganza, we called it. Because we did Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we tried to look at it that way. That this, you know, I mean, it was sad, it was horrible. But, you know, the celebration was wanting people to, you know, have different opportunities. So it was great because we had three different opportunities for people to be together, love on each other, and just, you know, be thankful for, you know, John's influence and everyone.
I assume everybody knows this, but everybody doesn't. If you're a veteran, you and your spouse and dependent children, adult as well, can be buried at no cost in a national cemetery. And it can be combined. One can be cremated or casket or however you want to do that. Headstones free. There's no cost whatsoever if you're a veteran. And I've had so many veterans' spouses say, "Oh, well, I didn't know I was eligible for that." Yes, you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So take advantage of that.
So that's for spouses and for the children?
Dependent children.
Dependent children. Okay.
Even adult dependent children.
No.
So if they were, you have to, in California, you have to have, no, the national schedule guys, they want a letter from the doctor stating the level of dependency. It's got to be verified a couple of ways, but they will still bury, I've got her scheduled. We were a 56-year-old girl that had Down syndrome and, you know, lived in a care facility most of her life. Mm-hmm. And she's going to be buried with her parents. So keep that in mind. So what, I mean, if you serve, you deserve it. Mm-hmm. Your family deserves it. John.
Mother-in-law has an insurance policy that she purchased through a corporate mortuary, so she's not locked in to use that at that facility.
Not
she
at
can
all.
Go to a family.
Yeah. You sign one piece of paper that transfers benefits. Transfer benefits from that mortuary to the other mortuary or the family. By the way, if you buy a policy, an insurance policy. There's two ways you fund those things. One is through a trust account. If the funeral home says, well, we put it in a trust account, go online and just look up funeral home trust abuse. And in California, the requirements of maintaining a trust fund is so stringent, we just decided we're not even going to go that route. But the other route would be to buy an insurance policy that is going to be honored by any mortuary. But there's a caveat to that. That insurance policy over a period of time is going to grow in value. So what the funeral home wants is make us your beneficiary, and then they're going to keep all that extra money that grew during that policy. The better thing to do is make a family member the beneficiary, not the mortuary. So, for instance, if you have a policy for $5,000 and over the years it grows to $8,000 and you die in your funeral service, and the beauty of that is it's supposed to lock in prices at that year. So we're going to give you this casket at this cost even if you don't buy it for 15 years from now. So you're locking in the cost, most of the cost. But that policy increases in value. So the insurance company will take all of that policy. They'll figure all the, I mean, the mortuary, they'll figure up the cost, and you're going to pay them the difference. Because the mortuary costs go up significantly every year. And they're going to figure out a way that your policy doesn't quite cover the cost. What we do that's kind of set us apart, and I don't say it to brag, it's just, it's our mentality. If you have a policy for $5,000, it grows to $8,000, and we do your service, and the service runs $6,500, we're going to write your family a check for the balance, because it's your money, not ours. But legally, we could keep it. But ethically, we will not. So don't structure a policy where it's going to benefit a mortuary. Let it benefit your family member.
An existing policy, can you change the beneficiary?
Yeah. Okay. The beneficiary, while they're living, can change it.
Okay.
Yeah. Ask Janice that question. She's one of them. She's licensed to do that. Once the death has occurred, I don't know. Yeah, you can. Yeah, the beneficiary can still sign that document, present it to the mortuary. Like if your aunt or whoever it was you were talking about, you know, you could have that switch to another funeral home. Okay. Which only makes sense, especially if you've moved out of the area. Why do you want to be locked in? Yes.
You know, I, as I'm sitting here thinking, the only reason I chose to come to this class is because I wanted to be in this room for the next class.
That's awesome.
Last week we had to bury my father-in-law in Wichita, Kansas. So Forrest Long, prior to that, has been sending us things, and we set up all kind of appointments, you know, to go over this cremation thing and you know, to start that process. And three different times we had to cancel the appointments. And so at this point in time, we don't have a mortuary or service or anything. And so that's why I think it was a God thing for me to be in this room and to hear and to know that Church of Christ people are in this business, and I don't have to use voice so long. So
there you go.
Now, so where do you live?
In Pacoima.
Pacoima.
San Fernando Valley.
San Fernando, yeah. We service that area with Gold Coast Cremation.
Okay, yeah.
And that cremation will run you around $500 to $600.
Okay.
So, you know, and save the money. Save the money. You need it for other things. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm from Central America.
Okay.
And a lot of my family and friends from New York City was going to pass away, and maybe they don't have, maybe the disease wants to be buried in Central America. Mm-hmm. They transport the body, I didn't know,
yeah,
as cargo.
Yes.
And when I knew that some of them have enough, they would not transport it in a casket. It would be like in a cardboard box. And when they get it from the body, get it sent from America, they have a casket they're waiting for. You know, but I had no idea that it would be a cargo thing, and feeling that the person that you feel that it's just cargo. You know that.
It depends on what country. You could never ship a person to the Philippines in a cardboard box ever.
Wow.
Has to be a sealable casket. Most countries, and it depends on countries. Mm-hmm. Most countries require it's called a Ziegler case. It's actually a bronze. Mm-hmm. Casket that's welded together. But many countries, if it's not going to be in a Ziegler case, it's got to be in at least a metal sealed casket, sealing with a rubber seal around it. So it depends on what country. But since you brought that up, if you travel a lot or someone you know travels a lot, we've had several deaths out of the country to bring the body back into the United States, and that is an absolute nightmare.
Hmm.
And wow. And you're looking at probably an average of $10,000 just to get them here to where mm-hmm. you can spend another six to bury them. Mm-hmm. But there is an insurance company out there, I don't know the name of it, if you are interested, there's a phone, our phone number's on, there's an insurance company out there, and I think it might be $495 or something like that. It's a one, obviously one time fee because you have to die at once. But it's like $495. $495. They will embalm your body if you're 100 miles or more away from home when you die. So even if you're not out of country, you're just on the East Coast where they'll have you embalmed and shipped back to the closest airport to your home. And they'll take care of all the expenses, and it's a $495 insurance policy. And like I said, we've shipped people in from Africa and Europe and Costa Rica, Mexico, and all of these families could have saved a tremendous amount of money mm-hmm. if they'd have had that insurance. Mm-hmm. Yes?
If you donate your organs, is there a cost that's involved with that?
Great question. Depends on who you donate to. Like UC Irvine has a program where with certain qualifications, they'll take your body for research and eventually have you cremated. I won't mention names. There's a person in our area that runs a cremation service where you donate your body to science. What the families don't know is he's making thousands and thousands of dollars off of your body mm-hmm. because your donations to science, he's actually selling the body parts for research and for surgeries and things like that. So he doesn't tell you that, but he's one of the most unethical people. Everything he does is legal. But he's not telling the families. The families, all they hear is, we'll take care of it at no cost to you. They don't know that this guy is raking in cash by the thousands.
Well, so. On a second thought of that, mm-hmm. on your driver's license, it's got a donor.
Yeah.
Well, who's going to be that donor? You don't designate it on the license.
No, so all that does is gives people at One Legacy, they'll give you a call. But even then, even though you're a donor, doesn't mean anybody wants anything you have. Because mm-hmm. if you have certain diseases, they're not going to touch you. If you're over a certain age, they're not going to touch you. Mm-hmm. If you have not been put on ice, so to speak, within a certain amount of time, they can't use anything. Mm-hmm. So it gives them a starting point, but there's nothing final about it at all.
So whatever hospital you supposedly go to and you die or whatever, and you say that you're a donor, do they then take your organs and then somebody else gets the body?
They will contact you.
They don't touch anything until they get further permission.
Okay. So you can't grab anything, Jane, for me.
Well, before you die, you have to say, wait a minute, I'm a donor.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter either.
The admission process of a hospital, don't they ask all those questions?
They do, but still, that just says, the people that take those organs know to contact your family. Just because you're an organ donor, they're not going to touch anything. That goes to a different, out here it's one legacy.
And if you're on your deathbed, that's the first question they're going to ask you.
What?
If you're on your deathbed, that's the first question they ask you.
Yeah.
This is sort of changing the discussion just a little bit, but I work every day with every phone call that kind of comes across my desk. I work in grief and loss. And,
okay.
We have a grief center for children that come. And so I guess I just feel a need to make a little public service announcement here about the importance of when there has been a death. Is that any child that is old enough to love is old enough to grieve. And that means little bitty kids. And people have so many questions about whether should I take this age child to a funeral and that kind of thing. And one of my just favorite authors in the field of death and dying and loss and so forth says, you know, there's not an appropriate age. If they're not old enough to walk, then pick them up and carry them. Meaning they, it's better being with that family and that experience. And I see children that have really just kind of been to, the family didn't think they were old enough to understand, or they thought they were sheltering them from something. And kids pick up things. And they're going to hear things. So I just encourage you, and everybody has got their own situation, and each child's different. But I think there is great value, and I have certainly seen that, to children being allowed to participate. And you have to look at their age and what's appropriate and what you even help them understand and the words you use. But I just wanted to say that.
Thank you so much. I have dealt with families where they have protected the children from death.
Yes.
And the first experience the child has with death is mom. And that's devastating.
Yeah. And people, I mean, I think one thing I've just been so shocked at through the years is that who does die every day in our city? And there's a lot of kids that lose parents. We think that first loss is going to be a grandparent or a great-grandparent, and siblings die, and we are a death-avoiding culture.
Oh, yes.
And so it's very important. It could really change the trajectory of their life, and I really do mean that, when they have been allowed to be a part of that process mm-hmm. with the family and grieve with the family and that kind of thing.
When our children were very young, you know, people were somewhat surprised that we would take them to funerals, but I didn't want their first experience to be
someone
grandparents or one of us.
Right.
And almost, at least on monthly, if not weekly, somebody will say, you know, well, we want to have a view, but I don't want my child to see this. And I leave it at that. It's not my place to say anything, but.
The first funeral I went to was my dad's. And that was one of the most difficult things I think I've ever done. After the fact, our preacher at the time, he was also our youth minister, just a young preacher, so he was involved in everything. He preached a lot of funerals, and he asked my mom for permission to take me with him for some of these and say, I'll help explain it. Over the course of the next year, I think I went to about 20 funerals. And I gained such an appreciation for what goes on behind the scenes, but along with the families and such, seeing what was happening. And it just, I guess it was kind of a weird education, but it was an education nonetheless.
Yeah.
I came out of that experience just understanding so much more about the whole process. I still have questions, that's why I'm here, but it just really was an eye-opening experience, and I was 11, 12 years old at the time, but just seeing what families go through, it's just, I don't know, it was a very interesting time.
In planning your funeral, let me end on this. If you're going to have more than one minister, pastor, preacher speak, make sure they have similar views. They had a service one time, and the guy got up, and he basically had the deceased on the advisory council of God, and the second preacher got up, literally got up, and I was sitting in my office when I had speakers up, and the guy gets up, he says, "Well, I don't know what Bible that fellow's reading from, but my Bible said," and he totally refuted everything the guy said. So that became a nightmare. So
he started off with that. That was his first.
Yes, first thing out of his mouth. So. But thank you so much for being here this afternoon. I hope it answers any questions.